Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
It's another Sunday edition of the Yahoo Sports Hockey Podcast. Justin Cuthbert, Julian McKenzie, and Julian, it's not like you don't shine every week, but I feel like this is going to be a particularly strong show from you. No man has their finger pressed more firmly on the pulse in Montreal. We have major news to discuss involving the Canadiens. So are you ready to deliver in a way that Claude Julien did not?
Ooh. So point for this Julien, no points for the other Julien, who is without a job, but will be chilling on the $5 million salary he's supposed to get next year anyway.
Yeah, I mean, that's always a pretty good consolation prize for coaches, but I'm sure most of them, maybe not Mike Babcock, but most of them would at least like to be in their position still, even if they have serious issues with their general manager, as we learned a little bit more about Mike this week. But this news, or this week, belonged to the Montreal Canadiens and their decision to fire Claude Julien. So I'm going to put you on the hot seat. I'm going to grill you a little bit because, again, finger, pulse, Julien on Julien. What was your immediate reaction to the news, and what did you have to stop doing immediately in order to cover said news?
Okay, so I'm gonna try to I'll just kind of peel back the curtain here. So the Canadiens lose their game to the Ottawa Senators, I believe, on the Tuesday night. The game is over. The very next day, I'm supposed to be recording a show for the Montreal Gazette called Hockey Inside Out. We record usually every Wednesday. I'm the host of the show. My editor messages me saying, hey, maybe we should prepare for the show just in case Claude Julien gets fired. And in my mind, I'm thinking, I mean, I don't know if that makes sense. I mean, we just passed a whole week off for the Montreal Canadiens, where if they wanted to do something, they could have done it. They didn't do it. The Montreal Canadiens are supposed to go to Winnipeg the very next morning, apparently at like 11 o'clock in the morning. So they're leaving from Ottawa to go to Winnipeg. So you're thinking, if they're going to make this change, it's not that much window for time, right? Considering that they'd be playing in Winnipeg the day after. The very next morning, wake up, setting up my laptop, preparing for the show, about 5 minutes before I'm supposed to go on air, go back to my room, check my phone, my editor is calling me, and I'm like, why do I have 2-3 missed calls? And I see all the notifications. Oh, that's what happened. So that's exactly what was happening there. That's immediately what happened. My reaction in the moment, surprised at the more of the timing, but less so of Claude Julien getting fired. And here's why.
Okay.
Claude Julien, with the team that he had in the first month of the year, playing amazing hockey. Some of the most amazing hockey I'd seen Canadiens play in quite some time. And then they meet the Ottawa Senators at the beginning of February, and things change. They get played tightly, and they don't look like that same team. In fact, they look like the 2019-2020 Montreal Canadiens, a team who struggled to score offensively. They were able to put up shots, and they were good at 5-on-5, but they were not able to produce as well as they did in January. They were frustrating, especially against teams that they should easily be beating. Last year, they lost 4 times to the Detroit Red Wings, a team considered to be the worst in the National Hockey League.
Yep.
And then you're going into this year where after 4 games, they're 1-1-2 against the Ottawa Senators. If my math is right, that's 1-5-2 in their last 8 games against teams considered to be the worst in the National Hockey League. Mark Bergevin, the general manager, saw a team that was repeating some of the bad habits that they had shown during last year's campaign pre-pandemic. And he decided, you know what? Enough is enough. I have to stop this at some point and try to get the team back on the right track. And he had even admitted as much. He had thought about those 8-game winless streaks from last season, and he had saw some of those bad habits from last year, and that's when he kind of started thinking about it. So it's not a total surprise when you kind of think of the last two seasons with Claude Julien as a whole. I'm more just surprised by the timing. I thought maybe he would have gotten a game or two in Winnipeg before. Like, see, around now, like when we're having this conversation, I figured now would have been an ideal time, at least, to fire Claude Julien as opposed to when they did earlier this week.
Okay, so the one thing I'm kind of curious about is the fans' perspective. Did they really want this? I got a note saying, you know, this is classic firing. We got an underperforming team and a coach that doesn't have, you know, years of winning ahead of or behind him that would help, you know, solidify his spot and make you believe that something else was around the corner and this team could sort of turn that corner. But we've only reached the point where this team could actually be successful. I mean, the roster was built to win this season, probably wasn't built to win in previous seasons. So what was the fans' reaction to this move? Did they want it in the same way that Bergevin wanted to change, or are they a little dismayed by the decision?
I think you'll find a big subsection of fans who for sure wanted this to happen. And I'll think that because of what I was mentioning earlier with how the team had played last year, I think a lot of those kind of bad memories came into their head. And over the last few weeks, I've seen a lot of fans just kind of get into full on panic mode. Obviously, just looking at Claude Julien's performance, wondering why the penalty kill and special teams has been bad. And that's one big reason why Kirk Muller is out of a job. He played a role in the special teams as well. Why Carey Price's play has come under scrutiny over the last few weeks. Phil Deneau, that was supposedly was their top center last year, was playing on that consistent line with Thomas Tatar and Brendan Gallagher. I saw a comment yesterday saying that because of the fact he hasn't scored in so long, he's starting to tread towards Scott Gomez territory. Remember Scott Gomez when he couldn't score for like a little over a year and a bit? That's where we're at with Phil Deneau. A lot of people have just been kind of panicking over so many facets of this team. So definitely you find fans who would just have no problem with Claude Julien getting fired when he did. But I think you'll also find a few fans as well who are still a bit surprised by the timing of everything. And they do wonder if the Montreal Canadiens had won that game in Ottawa, if their fortunes might have changed a little bit. And maybe they go into Winnipeg and things are a little better. Maybe they get one win out of two. And all of a sudden, Claude Julien is still kind of sitting pretty a bit. So I think you'll definitely find fans who were definitely in favor of the firing, considering of what had happened last year and what had happened over the last month or so. But I think there are a few others who are still kind of a bit surprised, more or less, by the timing, just like I was.
Claude Julien's one of the more, you know, confusing coaches in terms of his track record previous. I mean, we're seeing this is a coach that always has success where he goes in terms of 5-on-5 play and underlying numbers and all that. We saw him fired from Boston for the Boston Bruins. I believe it was in 2017. That team had some of the best underlying metrics and the worst shooting percentage in the NHL. And that was really the reason why they were underperforming. Now we're seeing the Montreal Canadiens, one of the best teams at 5-on-5. Yes, big time issues on special teams, but a team that was able to succeed in the, you know, the basic structure of the game and what it always defaults to start the game is 5-on-5 play, and that's where you have to be good at first in order to have success. And Julien has always been able to provide that. So why do the numbers not translate to results under Julien? You know, this is for the second time. Why did this continue to happen?
I'm curious about that. I can only speak from the Montreal perspective, but I have to imagine, I guess when the Ottawa Senators started playing them really tough at the beginning of the year, beginning of the month, I should say.
Yeah.
We saw a team that was going from not necessarily running gun, but they were taking advantage of open space. They were having all these outlet passes, and they were a pretty good, well-oiled machine, speaking with their offense. But with this Canadiens team over the last month or so, as well as they've been generating, you know, shots on net, you got to look at where these shots are coming from, too. The Ottawa Senators and even the Toronto Maple Leafs after them as well, and some other teams, were even the Winnipeg Jets over the weekend as well, they started forcing a lot of shots to the outside. And if you're a team that's shooting like 30, 40 shots a night, but like most of your shots are coming from the off wall, a lot of them are coming from the point and are missing the net, how effective of an offense are you really? Mm-hmm. And at least last year with Claude Julien's team, he could say that as good as they were 5-on-5, they still kind of lacked that finishing presence. You know, Brendan Gallagher can only do so much. Thomas Tatar could have only done so much. Mark Bergevin over the offseason went out and got a Tyler Toffoli. He got Josh Anderson. I know he's been injured over the last few games, but he's been a pretty good scorer for the Montreal Canadiens. He's been a good forward presence for them. He went out and he got pieces that were supposed to help them score. They're able to generate offense. It's just a matter of them needing to finish. He got those pieces. And when it came time for them to finish over the last month, they just were not doing that. So I think the biggest thing is just Cole Julian, for whatever reason, with this Montreal Canadiens team, whenever teams are able to shut down the middle and the Canadiens are forced to kind of fire from the point and from the outside, Cole Julian has not found a way to adjust to that defensive structure. And that's probably a big reason why he's out of a job right now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not trying to defend Julian, but there has to be a scapegoat. And he is he's the only real scapegoat that actually could be identified. I mean, we're looking at it. It's not going to be Mark Bergevin. He's not going to get rid of himself. He has done a lot of really good things, but there are mistakes here. I mean, the fact that Carey Price is having a terrible season is probably the main reason. Not terrible season. It hasn't been good lately. It's been pretty bad, actually. I don't want to say terrible, but it's not been very good. Is as much of a reason that Claude Julien's out of a job as anything. But we're also looking at, Mark Bergevin's track record of success, winning trades, building a good farm system. But the fact of the matter is, he doesn't have that guy who can be the dangerous weapon on a power play to really elevate a special teams unit. And, he's had a lot of years to try and get that guy. And as you mentioned, he's brought in some talent, some guys that can score goals. But no, there's not a player that can be that difference maker routinely on a power play. And I think that's one of the big things that they're lacking. Now, you can cover up a lot of that by getting scoring by committee, having a deep team as they are, having good 5-on-5 success. But all of that goes up in smoke if your goaltender is not playing very well. So if Carey Price had even been performing at an average rate among starters this year, would this move have happened?
Maybe not. I think the Montreal Canadiens, if they found themselves in a position where they didn't have the free fall that they were having over the last little while, they would still probably keep Claude Julien. But again, you think back to last year, and it's funny you mentioned, Mark Bergevin has done a lot of great things, and he's done some pretty good trades over the last little while, and getting Claude Julien in place of Michel Therrien looked like a really good move at the time, because Michel Therrien, even though he brought his teams to the conference final, there were some pretty deeply flawed teams. They were teams that were really reliant on Carey Price. But since then, Claude Julien had like one real playoff series before the pandemic. They lost to the New York Rangers. If it wasn't for the pandemic, the Montreal Canadiens very likely would have missed the playoffs, I think, for the fourth time in five seasons. There's a lot of pressure surrounding the Montreal Canadiens right now. And if the Montreal Canadiens find a way to miss the playoffs again this year, I can't see Mark Bergevin keeping his job. For all the good that he's done to try to reset the team and acquire Nick Suzuki and rebuild the farm system, at the end of the day, this is a franchise, this is a market that thrives on being in the playoffs and seeing successful teams. And Mark Bergevin, as good as he's done to kind of reset the team and kind of bring the team back, he has not brought the team back to the playoffs. Yes, they had their moment in the bubble, and it's inspired a lot of the changes we've seen right now. But of course, that also came because of the pandemic. I mean, over the last month, what we've seen so far, it's almost kind of undone everything that's happened. And one of the cool things we saw in the bubble was Carey Price playing at that top elite level again.
Exactly.
And he looked refreshed, and he looked great. And now here's the thing. I thought the idea of a goaltending controversy seemed a bit ridiculous at the time. And I'm sure if you talk to those players in the locker room, knowing how good they know Carey Price can be, they are in no way, they never go out and suggest that goaltending controversy should happen. I'm not saying it should, but now I understand why a lot of people are kind of beating that drum. And even Jake Allen has played really well over the last few games as well. If Carey Price played a little better, I think Sportsnet had some stat that since like last February, he's had like a save percentage under 900. Like, it has not been good for Carey Price in regular season games. If that was slightly over 900, Montreal Canadiens probably don't make that move. He does play a role in this.
Certainly. And I think, I'm talking about a just world and that it wouldn't only fall on Julian. I mean, the note that I get, classic firing being the underperforming team and no track record of success. I mean, that applies to Mark Bergevin. And maybe he understands that the pressure is on him. And that, as you mentioned, if he doesn't, have any success this year, if he's not able to make the playoffs with this team, then it probably is going to fall on him. And he had one more move and he made it. So his guy now is Dominique Ducharme, who has had a couple games now. It hasn't been immediate success right away. But could you identify a few things that have changed under Ducharme and what will continue to be tweaked, do you think, as Montreal tries to right the ship here?
So what I was able to kind of see so far, at least in the game Saturday night, this is a team that is trying to get back to their aggressive playing style. That's that gave them success at the beginning of the year, trying to be more aggressive on their forecheck. And they were generating a lot of shots over the weekend. Again, like I was mentioning before, if you're getting them a lot from the point and from the off wall, whatever, you're not going to generate a lot of offense that way. But they at least got themselves some high danger chances. I think they got 12. I'm trying to remember how much Winnipeg had in comparison, but the most important thing you should remember here is that Montreal had more high danger chances than the Winnipeg right. Jets did. Here's something else that was interesting. I mentioned the penalty kill and the power play has not been good. It's going to take some time. Alex Burrows, who has now been added to the coaching staff, and he's going to be working on that. During their morning skate on Saturday, normally you know, just a light day, light morning just to get a feel for the game, Canadians were working on their special teams. The coaching staff is not wasting any time to try to improve things that have not really gone their way over the last few weeks. It's going to take a few games. Jake Allen, in the post-game availability last night, he was on the St. Louis Blues team that saw Mike Yeo get dismissed in favor of Craig Berube, and we all know what happened after that. He mm-hmm. was saying that it took them about 2-3 weeks before that team really got themselves into gear. There's a lot of adjustments that have to be made. The only thing is that in a 56-game season, there is not a lot of time for you to kind of just take a few games to kind of figure yourself out. You need to figure that out in a week or so. You know, that's why a lot of people were saying, hey, why couldn't this firing have happened during that week off the Canadians had? It would have given a guy like Dominic Ducharme all the time in the world to kind of adjust and see what he could do with this team. But he's going to have to do it on the fly now. But at least in that Saturday game, it looked as if that team showed some positive developments with the shots they were able to generate with the forecheck that they were able to do. And this was without Josh Anderson, again, who's still injured.
As I said, finger on the pulse. That's the situation in Montreal with Claude Julien out, Dominic Ducharme in. It's going to only get more interesting in Montreal, so lots to dig into in future episodes. But for now, let's shift our attention to the West Division. We were going to discuss the teams that we thought have been elevated to, you know, yeah, we'll probably pass on watching them to Game Center Live favorites. And I thought that was a good idea until I realized that we were both probably just going to pick the Minnesota Wild. So let's just focus on them. Six straight wins after Matt Dumba had a buzzer beater against the Los Angeles Kings on Saturday night. They're now first place in the West Division. What is going on in Minnesota?
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
They're playing some good hockey, and I'll tell you what, it's cool to see them play really well considering that franchise has been mired in mediocrity for the better part of the last five years, maybe even longer than that. Ever since they signed Zach Parise and Ryan Suter to those contracts, it's just been a weird situation there. They're not necessarily bad enough to get a worse draft pick, but they're not good enough to be considered a true contender. I like this story, and I like the fact that they've been playing well over the last few games. They're the hottest team in the NHL right now, and this is in a division where they've got Vegas, which is a team that's supposed to be a cup contending team. Colorado's in that division as well. That's a team that I thought was going to go out there and win the Stanley Cup this year. They still very well could, but they're in a situation now where they have to think about the Minnesota Wild. I thought, you know what, if that fourth team that was going to be in, if it's either them or the Arizona Coyotes, maybe more Minnesota over Arizona. So maybe it's not a complete surprise considering that Minnesota, I think, could still be a playoff team in that division. But to see them kind of play what I think is above themselves. Look at the roster. I don't think they're necessarily a team that you would look at on paper and be like, whoa, they're a force to be reckoned with. Not by any stretch of the imagination, but they've been a really cool team to follow over the last little while.
Yeah, and you mentioned like you don't the names don't pop off the page, but there's lots of, you know, new or relatively new bodies. You know, Matt Zuccarello, Nick Bukestad, Kirill Kaprizov's obviously a guy we're going to talk about. Victor Rask, emergences of Jordan Greenway and Joel Eriksson-Ek. For that reason, I think a lot of credit has to go to their head coach Dean Evason, and it's not easy to take over for a guy like Bruce Boudreau, who has all this success, elevates teams that are not quite as good as they should be on paper, but what Dean Evason's done is really changed the way the Wild play pretty dramatically and for the better, you know, after coming from a coach like Bruce Boudreau, who's always better, who always seems to get more from the sum of its parts, or turns out that his team is more than the sum of its parts. Implementing systems with a collection of players that have just been thrown together, it seems. So I think a lot of the credit has to go to the coaching staff, but a lot of the credit online goes to Kirill Kaprizov. But it's more than Kirill Kaprizov. I mean, you just talk about, I named off some guys who are just having a lot of success, but let's not forget about Kaapo Kähkönen, their goaltender, who's taken over for Cam Talbot. And I think he's pried loose the starter's role from Talbot with an 8-4 record on the season. Like, a lot of good things are happening right now. And it's been this sort of mishmash, this collection of players jammed together. And when that happens, you've got to give a lot of credit to the coaching staff, who's able to keep these guys on a straight and narrow and have it come together so quickly. So I think we might be looking at maybe the front runner for Coach of the Year with Dean Evason. What's your read on what he's done?
The cool thing is that that team under Dean Evason, they started looking okay from the bubble. From the bubble last year, they showed some promising signs, right? So it's cool to see some of that kind of carry over into the next season. And now they put themselves in a position where they could be considered a contending team in that West division. I don't disagree with your take at all. I would be lying if I said I had a full list of who I thought would be considered to be Jack Adams worthy favorites. And if you had asked me this a month ago, I might have had Claude Julien on that list. But things could very well change. And if the Minnesota Wild keep themselves, you know, in that 2-3 spot in the West division, they don't necessarily have to win. They just have to make the playoffs. I don't see any reason why he shouldn't be considered for Coach of the Year.
You mentioned sort of empty calories from a shot share perspective with the Montreal Canadiens. I think we're seeing the opposite in Minnesota. I mean, this is one of the best expected goals for teams in the NHL, but not a particularly dominant team in terms of shot share. So, I mean, that's one of the things you look at in the performance of a head coach is, okay, who's running the possession? That's as much as they can be in charge of anything, it's that, because the systems generally produce those numbers, whether they're working effectively or not. But it hasn't been this particularly dominant team from that aspect. But what they're doing in terms of generating quality chances and preventing quality chances against is certainly a feather in the cap of Evason, but something maybe we should be looking at a little bit more closely in terms of how we evaluate teams, because Minnesota is maybe not the perfect picture of a team that you can evaluate really easily, but they're clearly doing some things really, really well. And for that reason, you know, being elevated into the Game Center Live rankings, taking a closer eye on what they're doing is probably beneficial to hockey fans and hockey analysts.
I mean, the West Division as a whole should be like on every hockey fan's must-watch list. It just so happens now that the Minnesota Wild should just kind of creep up a little higher on that list. Maybe not necessarily on the level of Vegas or Colorado just yet, but they're up there. They're up there, especially if they keep this winning streak going. That double goal, by the way, I just need to mention that for a second. That was fire to see. But also, Zuccarello with that pass, I don't know what those – I think there was like three Los Angeles Kings in that vicinity who all got beat by that one pass. And two of them at least were not covering Matt Dumba. And I don't know what they were doing on that play. But that was one of the more fun plays to see during this season. And if they get more of that, come on, that's going to make Minnesota one of the more fun teams to follow in this season.
I was going to scoff at the fact that you said that the Honda West division should be a division that we all keep our eyes on. But now that I'm thinking about it a little more, I mean, LA is playing a little bit beyond themselves and they're a little bit more exciting than we thought. A team like Anaheim now has Trevor Zegras in the lineup and they're a little bit more interesting. But I think one thing that we should consider with Minnesota is that they might be performing, you know, 6-game winning streak right now and shooting up to first place in the division. They might be having success right now because they're one of the fresher teams in the league. We've seen a lot of malaise around the NHL this you know, these past 2 weeks with teams not exactly producing the most exciting hockey, and maybe we're finding difficulty identifying storylines in there and so on and so forth. But what happened with Minnesota is they've only played 8 games in February due to a COVID-19 pause. And the last 6 games, when everyone else has been playing, you know, every other night, it seems, they've looked like the more dominant fresh team. So it could be coming to their advantage, or has been at their advantage, that they haven't played as much recently. But then, you know, we got the crushed pop can schedule for them coming up if they do, in fact, play 56 games. And then that could bite them in the butt a little bit. But right now, I think maybe a little bit of the success has to do with, you know, all the other things we mentioned. But the fact that they haven't played as much, I think that probably helps them as well.
That's true. Also, I'll give a shout out to the St. Louis Blues in that division as well. They're a team no less than 2 years removed from winning a Stanley Cup as well. There's a lot of good teams to watch in that division.
And speaking of the St. Louis Blues, I think we have to talk about maybe the biggest clown moment in the NHL this season, which was Jordan Binnington, sort of his lackluster attempt at starting a fight or, you know, assaulting different players on his way off the ice. He got pulled from the loss to the San Jose Sharks, was not happy about it, probably hearing it a little bit from the Sharks bench as he went towards his own bench. Pushed, I don't know who the first person he pushed, but he had like this little lazy push near the Sharks bench. Then you think he realized and was probably a little embarrassed that he had to go off the ice the other direction because that's how the visiting team gets to the ice pad in San Jose, which is, you know, so a little confusion going on. Takes like a fake blocker punch at Erik Karlsson, and then I guess gets called out by Devan Dubnyk. You have to see the video if you haven't, of him sort of having this little tantrum as he leaves the ice. But Devan Dubnyk sort of confronts him. They have this little lazy, sloppy pushing match for a second. And then Binnington gets off the ice. There's a certain threshold of aggression you have to meet if you're going to do something as outlandish as Jordan Binnington did. And because he didn't meet that level of aggression that you have to if you're going to actually do something as silly as he did, he just looked, it was kind of embarrassing. The half measures approach to, you know, this little mini riot that he wanted to start by himself kind of looked pretty bad on his part. Do you want to take any shots at Jordan Binnington for what was one of the more embarrassing moments all year?
It did not look kind of embarrassing. It was flat out embarrassing. But here's my favorite part of this entire clip. So Jordan Binnington is skating off, and he's obviously passing the benches or whatever, and one of his teammates is tapping him, you know, hopefully to try to encourage him or whatever.
Yeah.
That's when he immediately turns around and goes towards the San Jose Sharks bench. It would not surprise me if he was hearing it from someone on that Sharks bench.
Oh, yeah.
I want to live in a world where Jordan Binnington turned around because he thought someone on San Jose tapped him. And that's why he pushed that guy on the bench. I mean, if you look at the replay, if you look at the guy who he pushes first and you try to follow his track, I mean, I can look at the footage again, and if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But that guy wasn't chilling by the bench, that first guy he pushed. That guy was on a completely other side and was skating towards the bench. And it just so happens after Binnington turns around, he's at the bench and he's the first guy he sees. And when he gets pushed, he looks genuinely surprised. You know, when we see scuffles in the National Hockey League, and we know guys can really rip into players for, you know, whatever reason, you know, a guy will push a guy and be like, you know what? No, fine. I'll just push you back and we'll get it on. That first player looked genuinely surprised that Jordan Binnington was going to take a shot at him, and nothing came of that. Jordan Binnington just continued to skate on, and then he gave his little like shove or whatever to Erik Karlsson, who also looked surprised. Yeah. My whole theory is this. Jordan Binnington was very embarrassed at his performance and was embarrassed at the fact that he had to kind of take a long skate of shame towards the other side of the ice. And in that moment where, you know, you're maybe a little bit volatile, you're a little upset at yourself, you kind of act out a little bit. I think Jordan Binnington was just kind of acting out. And I'm very curious to know how much the San Jose Sharks are talking. I'll believe that Devan Dubnyk definitely wanted to say something. I think in his post-game comments, he was talking about what had happened, and I think he made a remark about how Jordan Binnington was kind of looked like a fake tough guy. So I can believe Devan Dubnyk definitely wanted to shove in at him. But I also want to live in a world where Jordan Binnington was just being a bit too sensitive over what was going on. And I think just one little tap might have just kind of set him off. I could be wrong, but I just want to live in that world.
As someone who enjoyed going to bars before we were, forced to live in our homes exclusively for the last 12 months, I feel like I've seen this situation play out at about 2 a.m. a couple times in my life, where an aggrieved, overserved fellow makes a little bit of a scene on his way out, but doesn't really amount to anything while he's trying to do it. Like, a missed punch, a missed shove, not exactly having the wherewithal to actually connect with any meaning. This is what it felt like to me, like a guy who was just making a scene on his way out of the bar, and everyone in the bar was sort of laughing at him as he finally exited the bar. Not Binnington's finest moment. Let's go to the biggest news, I'd say, in the sporting world this week, or at least the most interesting news, was the unveiling of NBA Top Shot, which is, I'm no expert here, but it's basically a blockchain system in which NBA fans or sports fans or just anyone can own moments in the NBA. By sort of buying a pack of virtual trading cards, you can own these moments. And now people are either going to sit on them, they're going to sell them right away for profit, whatever they're going to do with them. It's a new way for the NBA to have driven revenue and to create something that could be, that we could be talking about and trading in decades to come. And obviously, as the NHL does, it identifies other things that are working in other areas and thinks about how they can implement them themselves. So while I feel like this is very much, it just came out, it's very much in its infancy. We don't know exactly what it's going to be. It's going to be on other sports leagues to probably follow suit. And we could soon see NHL Top Shot or NHL Top Shelf coming to us in the near future. So
You on to something with that name? That's good.
I mean, I saw that online, but I don't know exactly who I stole it from. But if you are listening, I apologize. But that is, that would be the perfect name for it. But do you think this would have the same cachet in the NHL? Are you going to be waiting in a virtual line to own moments that we've seen previously in the NHL, or is this something that seems like it's right up the NBA's alley and, like other things, only up the NBA's alley?
I'm still confused about it. Someone on Twitter described it as this. It's as if all of the Bitcoin you have was a TikTok. Mm-hmm. And I'm a little intrigued at why people are invested in buying a moment that you could go on YouTube and watch whenever you want. Like, what is the purpose of having a moment that... fine, you can play over and over, and it supposedly could generate thousands of dollars that you could ultimately watch for free on your own time, at least for a card, right? At least for a physical card. It's shiny, it's hologram, you have it, you can hold it in your hand.
And for someone else to see it, you have to show them.
Yeah, exactly. But for this, I'm not trying to hate, I'm just trying to understand. I'm trying to figure out what the science is, because there's a lot of money being poured into this. And you're even starting to see NBA players take notice of this. And I think some players are even starting to, they have their own moments and they're encouraging people to buy their own moments. Mm-hmm. I'm also just curious, if the NHL were to do this, what moment do you think would generate hundreds of thousands of dollars? Because the NBA, obviously, we know their place in the world, in the pantheon of world sports, and how people around the world are invested in the sport. I don't think the NHL has that same amount of cachet. So a Connor McDavid goal against the Toronto Maple Leafs, where he does the head fake and goes towards the net and scores that incredible goal, how much is that going to be worth? Alexander Ovechkin scoring, on his back, a lucky goal, as some people may call it. I still call it skill. It's the goal of the century. How much is that going to be worth? Sidney Crosby's plays. I'm talking about three of the best players that we have ever seen. And it's very possible they could have moments that cost as much as a DeMar DeRozan mid-range three. Maybe that's excessive here, but that just goes to show, I don't know if people are going to, in the NHL world anyway, because we know it to be a bit more traditionalist, I don't know if there's going to be the same interest in NHL Top Shelf. But I'm going to use NHL Top Shelf for this purposes here. I'm sorry to the person who has had their intellectual property stolen by Justin. Please don't sue us. But I'm not sure if the numbers are going to be driven up to that same point if it happens. I could see people being active, but I'm not sure if it's going to be the same thing. Plus, I love having hockey cards.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's going to be the same thing. It's all relative, right? Like a LeBron dunk in, you know, in a big moment in a playoff game is going to be worth more than the overtime winner, the Nick Bonino overtime winner, I guess, that we saw. Like, obviously Bonino and LeBron James are not on the same playing field, but it's always going to be a little bit more valuable in the NBA than it is the NHL. That's just the simple relationship between the two. But I was scoffing at this idea right away until I saw all the people that seemed to be a little bit more in tune with, you know, what becomes worth something, like people that I've seen into cryptocurrency, people that I know that are in the stock game and have been for a long time, been talking about blockchain for 10 years, and they're the ones in line for the NBA Top Shot. And that makes me think, well, I've got to open my eyes a little bit more, because that's clearly, like, it's clearly if they're interested in it, maybe there's potential there. And I do think there is potential in the NHL, but I think it depends on the players. As you mentioned, the NBA players getting more involved in it and saying, hey, buy this moment and I'll do this for you on the other side. So it raises their value and their profile because they understand that all these things are connected. And that's just something that NHL players don't seem to really have a grasp on yet. But yeah, I think it would be cool if you did get in line and you spent a couple bucks and all of a sudden you pulled out the goal that McDavid scored against the Columbus Blue Jackets in his return from broken collarbone, and you're sitting on that, and maybe in 25 years, this whole thing has exploded and you're sitting on one of the more valuable cards there is. I don't know if that would be one of the more valuable cards there is, but certainly that would be a moment that would be cool to own, even though everybody else can just watch that goal whenever they want.
I'm just picturing, like, NHL players who would go out of their way to, like, promote themselves on this fictional NHL Top Shelf card game. And I'm just picturing, like, Dale Weiss picking up, like, a playoff goal he scored against the Boston Bruins. PK Subban, I could see potentially, you know, hey, here's a goal I scored against the Bruins. Here's a goal I scored against the Bruins. He's done this a lot to the Bruins, a lot.
Who's that huge hit that Subban had? It was Sportsnet was playing it recently. I forget who it was on. I believe it was a Boston Bruin.
Was it Marchand?
Yeah, it was Marchand, and he was like doubled over. Like, if you could own one of the biggest hits in NHL history, and PK Subban is the guy involved, I mean, that seems like a moneymaker to me. I don't know about you.
I have a weird question, and this is something that only I would ask because I'm very into media in this way. So for these cards in the NBA, the moment that you possess, are you simply just watching the play? Is it just like the play over, playing over and over, and you're just hearing, you know, the in-game noise? Are you hearing the commentary team on these things? Here's an example. LeBron James had this amazing dunk against the Boston Celtics, I want to say in 2009 or 2010. It's a pretty dope dunk, but one of the biggest reasons why it's an amazing dunk is because Kevin Harlan is saying, you know, with no regard for human life, right? Like, does that matter in that too? Because I feel like sometimes some of these moments that we see, as epic as they are, sometimes they're kind of elevated a little bit by the people, you know, kind of bringing color to them. So this is a dumb little question that I have. If you're getting a moment, am I just watching a play just kind of repeat over and over with no sound? Am I hearing the commentary? I feel like, you know, this is just a weird idea I have. If you're getting like a radio call for one play versus like another one that's not nearly as good, that should affect some value as well. If I get a goal that was called by Chris Cuthbert, it makes it even better than one covered by, you know, who's another commentator who's not nearly as good as Chris Cuthbert. I don't know. I'll think of somebody else.
If you're going to bring that up, you got to at least bury someone if you're going to bring that up.
Oh my God!
You got to have it both ways. Okay. You got to do it both ways. Don't bury it. We'll do it.
I had a name and you stopped me from doing it.
No, I don't want to do that. Don't want to do that to anyone. No, I think you bring up a good point though, because, okay, let's say I open a deck of cards from NBA Top Shot and I got a Jermaine O'Neal dunk with the Pacers that was basically nothing. You know, obviously might be a little disappointed. But with the NHL, I think what they could do is, let's not have a Matt Calvert goal in a nothing game be in the deck. Let's have only exclusively these great moments, and let's have something different about these moments than what you would see on YouTube. So if you had, you know, all this footage, maybe stuff that we haven't seen from that McDavid goal where there's, you know, EdmontonOilers.com is rolling on it. You've got players mic'd up. You've got a little bit extra you could add. So it's not what it just is on YouTube or Twitter or whatever. Then it might give a little bit more juice. I think if you're the NHL, you can't just sell everything because so much, it would just dilute everything. I think you have to have these special moments, things that you cannot find just anywhere else in order to differentiate and to actually have that value. Because as we mentioned off the top, the NHL is just not the NBA in that same way.
Yeah, I don't know. I think anything to kind of add to those cards, already you're at a point where you might not have card values reaching up to the same level as it would be in the NBA, but anything to kind of stick out, that's going to help your product going forward. Also, you know what? I'm not going to mention that commentator. I'm sorry.
We're not going to do that. We're not going to do that.
No, I'm sorry. I just thought of a genuine moment. Chris Cuthbert calling like a Brendan Moore overtime winner. You remember that from a few years ago?
Yeah, I think I know what you're talking about.
Were you awake for that? Were you asleep? It was late in the night.
I mean, as old as you think I am, I was still probably pretty young at that point. And I might have been in bed. I don't know. I might have watched on the highlights the next morning.
Okay. All right.
It was a long time ago.
It was like a decade at least. It was at least like over a decade.
Over a decade. Yeah, it was a while ago. Okay. Anyway, to wrap up that conversation, if the NHL does something, I'll get a deck. I'll get a pack of cards. Why not?
Yeah, see what happens. Well, I'll buy like the entry-level stuff, like the $9 stuff.
It's a lottery ticket.
Yeah. You're like, who cares?
Okay, before we go, quick shout out to our producer, Ben, who does a fantastic job for us every week, but also produced a fantastic piece for Sportsnet recently on Wayne Simmonds, who pens a letter to his young self. Our guy, our producer, Ben, provided the visuals to that. It's definitely worth a look. I will tweet it out. So shout out to Ben. Shout out to you, Julian. You stepped up when Claude Julien didn't. That's it for us on the Sunday edition of the Yahoo Sports Hockey Podcast.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.